Okay, here we go. Hello, my sexy, ooh, fashionable, ooh, trendy, knowledgeable confidants. Welcome back to another episode of Confidently Insecure. I am your host, Kelsey Dara, and this is the podcast where we are absolutely sure we don't know everything. But we can just throw that log line right out the motherfucking door this week because this is a topic I am so hyped to talk about. I know everything about. And you guys, we have an insider creator, not only for my favorite show of all time, but also doing cool shit out there in the entertainment world. You guys, I'm so excited to introduce you to Amos Mack. Amos is a television writer, artist, and founder of Original Plumbing. His personal story was featured in the HBO documentary, The Trans List. And he's been honored on the Out 100 and The Trans 100 and is the co-writer creator of No Ordinary writer of the No Ordinary Man. Amos Mack, you are a writer for the show Gossip Girl. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I've never had such an introduction in all of my life, and I don't think I ever will again.
Honestly, that
I was there through the entire thing.
It was a journey. It was up, down, yeah. All around, but we got there. Amos, I'm so excited to meet you. I got connected to you through another industry mentor of mine, and I've been writing and tweeting about how much I love Gossip Girl and talking about it on this show since like 2010, I think was the tweet that I found as long ago. And you are the motherfucking like cook in the kitchen making this show. I want to talk about everything you're doing, but first we have to get the Gossip Girl conversation out of the way. So tell me, how does one get to write for our generation Sex in the City?
I mean, I was a staff writer on this new season that has just come out. So that means that I am the lowest of the totem pole of writers. So
still there, all props
to, you know, Josh Safran, the creator of this new iteration, which is really not a reboot, but more of a same world, new kids.
Yes.
Same world that the last one existed in, just all, you know, a new New York, same school, yes. Whatever. But I mean, my journey there was very, the universe came together at the right moment. You know, I had been following in the trade magazines when I was reading Gossip Girl was like coming back, you know, and I was very excited about that. I was putting words out to friends who, you know, like at that point I was an assistant. I was like a script coordinator on Transparent's finale, on the finale of
Transparent. Hello.
Yeah, the musical finale. So I was doing this, it's a support role and it's very intense. And yeah. I'd done that for another show before Transparent, and I was trying to make my way up to become a staff writer.
Wow.
So when I saw that post, I started, you know, the cards aligned. That's the easy way to put it, but it was a journey to get there.
And we totally believe in that witchy shit here on this podcast. I think like randomly the last 3 or 4 months, we've probably had 4 or 5 different witches on this show to talk about like the universe and alignment. So like, do you know your big 3? Can we drop them? Get a little insight? Yeah. Let's hear it.
I'm Sagittarius with a Libra rising, Libra moon.
Oh, bitch. Libra rising, Libra moon. This makes so much sense that you are able to do a job like scripty coordination, and like that is an intense, very straightforward, fast-paced job. I feel like
the one that's on set is the, what is it, that's a different job,
script supervisor,
that's the one that's like right my there. Mind but yeah, but it's almost like they're like editing, and you know the way that they're I don't even know the words. I don't know the language. But the script coordinator is more like every time that a script change happens, or like, you know, you're just coordinating with the writers and the showrunner and then production.
Yeah.
And it's like a juggling act. So, I mean, it's similar, but it's more, I mean.
You can't fuck up in that job.
Yeah, it feels like everything is falling onto you. In that
high
job. So
stakes.
Props to everybody who has ever done that job. It is, you know, I honor you all aww. Script coordinators past and future.
You're so like, I'm just noticing we're talking for 5 minutes, but you're so giving of like thanks and gratitude to other people. Do you ever just let that moment soak into yourself and be like, holy fuck, I'm a staff writer on Gossip Girl? Because I feel like you need to know you are that Yes. That bitch, right?
Yes,
now.
I mean, of course, it's like it's the coolest thing, and I, you know, love to brag about it. If when like on, yes. on Instagram, my only social platform,
but
like
where it matters.
There's a funny story, like because with the original Gossip Girl, I was living in New York City at the time, and I was like to make ends meet, I was doing like background extra work.
Yeah, of course.
And of course, guess what show I ended up on in the fifth season?
Stop. What? Tell me. Gossip Tell me everything. Yeah. Tell me what I mean, you what
the original
scene?
Gossip Girl. It was like it was a New Year's Eve party at Nate's job at the newspaper or whatever.
Okay. Yes.
And I'm in the background at this party, like with my hair slicked over in a suit. And I'm just like in the background of like all these like party scenes. So it's very much a full circle to be able to write on the new iteration of Gossip Girl. It's okay. also like a dream.
Were you a fan of the old one, or was it more just like that was a job you did and you kind of knew the ecosphere of how big of a deal it was?
I was a fan of it, but I was doing that. I was doing extra work basically full time at the moment. Like it was back in the original plumbing days, and it was like I was piecing together income in order to like of work course. On my passion projects. And so I was doing almost full time. It was like extra work for commercials, which actually paid more and lots of television stuff. So it was like whatever was filming in New York City, I would usually end up on that show at least once or twice.
I too lived in New York City during the Gossip Girl era, and listeners of the show or of the Guilty Pleasures podcast, which we also did an episode about Gossip Girl. I don't know if you've heard it yet. I need to send it to you because I am like standing for life the fucking episode. I was so influenced by the original show, like my fashion, my verbiage, my like where to go when I first moved there. I was like 17 or 18 when I first moved there. Like I had no money, no fucking clue how to ride the subway. And it, you know, I had the headbands. I even brought my headbands to show you that like
wearing them all.
I wanted to be her, all of them so bad. But who was your favorite character out of the original if you had to pick?
Oh gosh, I never had to think of that before. Oh,
because I feel like this version, the characters are so new, so fresh, so like of the times, which is like picking an old character is going to be problematic no matter how you spin it.
Yeah.
Oh, like yeah, let's Blair.
No, how about the gay brother that lasted like a season?
Eric, he like, what the fuck? They tried. They were like, he's gay.
It was a different time, you know, it was a different time for television. It was, you know. But it's really cool to be able to, you know, push the boundaries now and have representation. So,
yes. So let's like slide into that conversation with the new Gossip Girl. Like I was so thrilled to see the freshness of diversity in casting. And one of my questions was about being like, you're a writer who is trans. And I did not know there was a trans actress playing on the show. And even in the other podcast, I said something like, oh gosh, like I'd love to see more trans representation in the show, but knowing that there is someone who plays the character and it has nothing to do with like the story and making it such a big deal. Like what was your involvement in that process? Are you involved in that process? Like, what does that mean to you for representation?
I mean, it means a lot for me to be able to see a character like Luna, who is an incredible, you know, Zion's an incredible actress, and the character is just dynamic and incredible and pointed and has, you know, very strong opinions. So it's just refreshing to see a character like that.
Exactly. And as a very loud and proud bisexual, I was so fucking hyped to hear that one joke in the first episode that was like, don't straight shame me. And I was like, yes, we got more gays on this. Like, was that even a conversation to developing these characters, or were they already developed? And I was like, yes, this is just like reflective of the times now.
I mean, they were all the brainchild of Josh Safran, the showrunner. We all, once the room came together of the different writers, we did like flesh it out a bit more. And of course that was always something that was on our minds, like to give an authentic new viewpoint of who these characters could be. And instead of tropes, like beyond the tropes of what we've seen and what people have tried in the past. And
And I love too that, again, just like Luna Law's character, there's no like conversation about these people's like gender identities or sexuality or fluidity, even. It's just, it just is. It's just played naturally. And there doesn't have to be like a moment to point it out. It just feels like, I live in Los Angeles and West Hollywood, so maybe I'm just around it more, but it just feels like my life. And to see how I've grown from the original semi stereotypical tropey characters into like this person, like I even get chills. Amos, I'm such a fucking Gossip Girl whore. Like, it just feels amazing to see how the show grew and took notes and saw like what we could make this show and character be for a lot of people. And like, does that fucking excite you? Like,
yeah, it excites me to see it, because I mean, to see it after all this time, it feels like it's been a long time because of COVID. There was some, you know, there's a bit of a lag, but there, but so it's been, I feel like, you know, I'm seeing this for the first time as well with everybody else. So it's been really exciting. Like every week, you know, old school, like every week I'm tuning in to like see the show. So
it's, that is so old school. This is like the first show in a while. You're so right, because of COVID, that I'm like putting on my calendar to watch versus I just fucking turn on Netflix and like whatever the fuck is in my face, I guess I'm watching.
Are you watching it like at midnight as it drops, or are you watching it like the next day?
Mama takes sleeping gummies and goes to bed at 9:30, so she watches on Fridays or like Saturday morning, like my cartoons. But I have to be alone. I put down my phone. I need to like really absorb every line, because yo, this shit is quick. An ensemble this big, like, how do you as a writer keep up with that and write that many people and stories?
I mean, it's a collaborative effort, you know, in the writer's room. It's people, you know, pitching stories, arcs and character arcs and dialogue. But, you know, then, you know, people are assigned individual scripts and they go away and they write it. And then, you know, then there's rewriting. So it's really such a collaboration that it's good to have many hands on deck for the characters.
And I feel like a lot of young writers, it's something I had to learn, that like to be a writer in television or like streaming, whatever you want to call it, you do so much alone to get to a place at the table that like you don't realize this is not supposed to be done alone. So by the time you get there, you've really done it all, written scripts, like punched up, like created, developed, and then to be able to get in a room where it's like a little bit of pressure. I mean, does it feel, is it a relaxing environment? Is it like SNL where everyone's doing coke and staying up till 4 a.m. getting yelled at, or like, is it more relaxing?
I think there's like been a new, there's been a, like, honestly,
I have friends on show, so I know. I fucking know.
I mean, this is a drama, you know, it's a soapy teen drama. And so I am at, I don't know what comedy writer's rooms are like, but that's like what we go to. We think of like, you know, that the moment in, what's the comeback, you know, do you, have you watched that with Lisa Kudrow playing Valerie?
But I do know what you're talking about. People love that show.
Yeah. Well, there's season one where she's, you know, she's working on this like kind of like really bad sitcom, and she goes into the writer's room to give them cookies in the middle of the night because they're up late rewriting, and she's trying to make them like make herself likable. And she just walks in on them. Like, anyway, it's just watch the season one of the comeback.
I'm going
But basically the writer's room, I think writer's room in general are places where you should let, you should push your extroverted self out. You know, that's where it's best for. So if you're introverted, it's, you have like, so I can be introverted often. So I, you know, you have to push yourself to be in on the conversation, because it's, there's a lot of voices in the room.
I did the Sundance New Voices Lab in 2019, and it was the first time we got a mock writer's room. And I think it was like Danny Chun or someone from The Office that came in and like ran the fake show we were creating. And let me tell you, I learned a lot about my motherfucking ego and self in a writer's room, like getting shut down, not having anything, feeling kind of useless, like doodling on my page. Like, I don't think people know writer's rooms. I feel like, and correct me, what does your writer's room look like with snacks and toys? But I feel like every writer's room has like motherfucking Play-Doh, kinetic sand, fidget spinners, all kinds of markers. Like, I feel like the room is just like a child's a grown-up child's playground, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think part of the process is being able to, like, you know, sit in your silence and, like, and zone out and, like, come up with these moments. So, I mean, we had, like, magnets that we play with. People were drawing. I love to, like, sketch draw as well. What else did we have? I mean, I just remember the magnets, and I've tried to find the magnets for myself now that I'm not in the room because I want to play with them. Oh, and also like that weird putty stuff. There's that, like, it's like a goopy kind of putty. Crazy errands.
It's okay. Been my favorite, yeah. Good to know. So tell me about the process. Like, were we in New York City? Were we over Zoom during COVID? Like, how did you guys get up to the, like, the, I guess I should say, like, do you create the whole season and then it shoots and airs? Are you guys writing and then shooting? Like, how does the whole process work for scheduling, I guess?
For this show, we wrote it in person in Los Angeles before COVID. And it was, we were in a physical writer's room, and it ended like right around when things were starting to shut down. But it was like, that was actually just like the timing. And, then they started filming, but obviously they film in New York City.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And so when it was done, because there are a lot of pop culture, like, time sensitive jokes that really work in today's time. Like, you guys got a lot of COVID jokes in there, conversation, and like the pop culture stayed relevant, even if you wrote this in 2019, like, how does that work?
Well, there's, like, you know, updates and punch ups that, you know, when time has passed to make it, you know, to get to that point.
Okay. Then
I wasn't really like once it like ended, then it was really, there was like the waiting game of production and stuff like that.
Right.
So, but yeah, rewrites happen.
Yeah. We have to talk about the actual dialogue, because, oh my God, this shit is so fast. If you like look down at your phone and you missed like the best line, and it's so smart. And part of me was like, do you have to know that people that are like this in New York City culture, like to name a brand or a spot or like a meme or something that's popping in New York? Like, do you have to know that culture to be able to get it so right?
There were people that knew very specific New York City culture and history and what, you know, and locations. So that was, you know, major. Absolutely. Yeah. There were people who were like that, you know, they knew exactly what they were talking about.
Cause like to you, I'm like, you're so nice. I thought like writers would be like the characters, like you have to pull from your own personal experience, but like, do you know anybody in your life that is like any of these characters?
I feel like I am able to take, you know, my own experience in the world and people of all different ages into these characters, you know, like when it comes to like writing dialogue. So it's not. I feel like I've lived a life. So and these kids are pretty mature. So.
Right. I was going to ask that because my co-host on my TV and movie podcast, Zach, had said something like, I want these characters to be like messy and drunk and sloppy. Like I want them to be a fashionable mess because that's the world I want to live in. I don't want to live in them being super woke or political. Like I want them to be problematic and messy, just like the world looks like kind of in New York City. And I was like, that is true. It feels like it has a tone of what we talk about and deal with today, but that we can still create that entertainment piece of it. That is like, you just want to watch them be fucking rich and messy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't grow up that way, but it's so it's cool to pretend.
Yeah, exactly. You got to put like your pretending head on, but let's talk about you like as a writer. What kind of experience did you bring in from your life and your journey into the show, if at all?
I mean, geez, I always feel like I have like such a connection to like young adult and like teen stories, maybe because like as a trans person, like when I was in high school, that I didn't get to experience what I feel would be like a traditional teen coming of age. It was very like stunted and like, you know, isolating, and it was so I really connect with like, you know, like the crushes and the wanting to find yourself and connect with like, you know, just like the messy moments of not really knowing like how you fit in or how you even like some of the characters on the show who are together and know who they are. It's just they're still kids.
Right. And like the actual actors themselves, some of them are a little older than high school. And I think that that was a funny conversation, like on social media, about the age difference between the teachers and the students. Like the actual actresses may even be older than the actresses playing the teachers, but they're playing high school students. Like, do you look at any of the social media response and want to go like, hey, as a fucking writer, there's a reason why we do this thing or that thing, or, you know?
I don't really know. I don't like look on Twitter or anything.
Wow.
I just am on Instagram.
And what it's the just fuck? Like, yeah. What about you made you go, I'm not going to be on Twitter?
I used to be on Twitter maybe like 10 years ago, but then, and I was active for a while. Yeah. And then I was just like,
the weather is getting warmer, so it is time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and tees. I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now that I've got a lineup of timeless pieces that keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from 30 doll hairs, washable silk tops, timeless 14 karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands.
I can confirm this. I'm actually wearing Quince pants right now.
You are.
They are so, they're loose, they're breezy. These babies have a button, a fly, drawstring, and elastic in the band. So I can like, I can dress them up, I can dress them down.
Yes.
They're the perfect pant for summer, and I'm really comfortable as hell in them.
Honestly, I am wearing the Quince 14 karat gold earring loop right now.
Oh my God.
I know. I think it's so cute. It does not tarnish. It is so comfy, and I have sensitive ears, so I'm really loving this for my body. So get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/Kelsey for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/Kelsey to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/Kelsey.
Didn't enjoy it. Yeah. What else to say? It wasn't for me. And I felt like putting energy into, for me personally, like into like trying to come up with something that people would like connect with and want to like share widely or retweet. I was like, I should just be like focusing on like writing a script and like getting a job like that way.
Yeah. You're like not trying to write for the fucking SNL weekend update. Like your two liners on Twitter aren't being like resurfaced as your job resume. Like you,
it just felt too, yeah. I just would rather like, I'm more of a like visual, like let's share photos and talk about it on Instagram.
Well, I think that brings up another great point about like aesthetic in this show is so important. Like the fashion, the outfits, the colors, the phone, like the way they text, they type it, the aesthetic is just so like, I want to say Gen Z. I mean, is that something you guys write into the script as, you know, people who get to experience that or, you know, maybe not in real life? Is it still pretending?
I mean, tonally, like that I feel like I was pleasantly surprised with like seeing it for the first time, like as it aired on HBO Max. And I wasn't like wanted to hear like the music in and, you know, not just the soundtrack, but like the, you know, like the instrumental that like really added to the tone of every scene. It was like very exciting, and that I wasn't expecting it, you know?
Right.
I love it so much.
Do you like, are you able to watch a show that you write and not analyze it? Like, do you have to watch it a couple times, like one as enjoyment, one as analyzing it?
I want to rewatch it like multiple times. I haven't yet, but I do like, I want to be able to like go back and like make sure I've caught everything. But I did worry that I would, you know, maybe have the experience of like, I can't watch it, or you know, I must remove myself, because I felt that way with like other things that I've worked on in the past.
But yeah, sure.
Now I want to like do it. I want to
eat it up.
Watch it a million times.
Well, I wish I could tell you like how well it's being received on Twitter. Like I go and just look up the hashtags and see what people are saying about it, because it's so funny and people are so digging it. And people that are original fans, like I feel like, maybe I'm wrong, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like the teacher's storyline was kind of put there for people like me who are 30, about to turn 31, that watch the original and have like characters to identify with, rather than just high school kids who maybe it feels like too much of an age gap. Am I going too deep?
I have no idea. I'm actually not sure, because, you know, that was all like that was figured out before I joined. Yeah. You know?
I feel like that's gotta be a touch of it where it's like, you can see yourself in the teacher position now and like thinking about these kids are just, I feel like an old person on my patio porch going like, you crazy kids and your cell phones and your fashion. And blah, blah, blah.
Wait, who do you identify with most on the new show?
Oh my God. Oh, I like probably, I want to say, fuck, that's such a question. I mean, I am a raging bisexual, like a little problematic, a little bit messy. So I feel like the obvious is what's his nuts, the Chuck Bass lookalike, the twin. Fucking
Max Wolf.
Max Wolf. And that's why I can never remember his name, because it's Max. And I remember being like, that's such a Chuck Bass name. Like, you're never going to forget Max Wolf. But I love like aux fluidity. I love that potentially they're getting into like some sort of open, maybe potentially threesome-y relationship. I'm in an open relationship with my partner, so I just feel so represented of those feelings of seeing like what, you know, holding maybe a secret or a jealousy in about a crush to your partner, and then finally the relief that comes with revealing that and then realizing your partner also is down to fuck other people. Like, it just feels so now. So yes, I think probably Max. And even though, like, I had someone ask me, like, do you feel like it's tropey? Like, the bisexual one is, or pansexual one's messy? And I'm like, I'm that, though. I am that. Like, there are bisexual people that are kind of the, like, dramatic ones. So I don't know. Like, what about you? Tell me, who do you identify with most?
Oh, goodness. I'm really, like, feeling, I love, like, Aki's story.
I was going to say Ark.
Yeah.
Tell me more.
No, I'll just leave it at that.
Okay.
But I love it. You know, I love what I've seen so far. Yeah. Like what the world has seen and like, you know,
yeah,
the questions that are coming up about that and the conversation. So
that's exactly what I said, is it's going to spark a lot of conversation, I think, in like relationships too, which is something that I don't think we have enough of in our media at all, is that kind of, polyamorous always, I feel like, sounds like such a buzzword, but yeah, open, fluid, just sharing love. I'm excited for that as well. But I want to talk about more of you as a creator. I know we have to talk about No Ordinary Man. Tell us what is coming beyond Gossip Girl. You're like off and popping, man.
It's been a busy month of like releases for me. So it's, maybe no, it kidding, seems like I'm busier than I am, but like,
but we love that energy. Yes. We let it,
let's
happen,
just go with it. And yes, like, I'm super. Yeah. But No Ordinary Man is a feature documentary about the life of a jazz musician from the 1950s-ish era named Billy Tipton, who was assigned female at birth. And after he passed away in 1989, he was outed as transgender, and his adopted kids and his last wife did not know. So it's really more about it's a conversation about how do we talk about Billy Tipton, a man who maybe didn't want his story told, at least especially by trans creators. So it's co-directed by Chase Joint and Ashling Chin-Yi, and I co-wrote it with Ashling Chin-Yi, and it was fully funded by like Canadian grants and government. Despite this being a story about an American jazz musician.
So go Canada. Let's go
it's
Canada.
It's totally incredible, right? It's amazing. And it played the festival circuit for about like almost a year, but now Oscilloscope Labs is distributing it.
Yeah.
It's in theaters now. It's in theaters all like in like, you know, the small, like the art house theaters, like it's playing in a few places in LA, New York, and opening all over. But I can give you the link if you want to share it later.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that like even to have any distribution right now as things are opening back up and like with COVID and just being able to have that at all out there in the ether is amazing. And like, that's a huge deal for, you know, people that maybe aren't in the entertainment industry to know that like having the distribution on that. I mean, getting that story funded, co-write, like, how do you feel about telling this story? What is that conversation that you're having to prepare a lot for in, I'm assuming, PR and media interviews?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like it's more about, you know, coming up as a trans man when there was hardly any representation, and then like taking it back to a personal level, Googling like when I was, you know, like 17 years ago, transgender, or maybe I was asking Jeeves at the time, you know,
oh,
like,
no, not
you
Jeeves.
Know, like, famous trans man or FTM, female to male, and right. Billy Tipton's name coming up with like very few information, just being like, he cut two records. He had three kids. He was outed after he died, you know, and, you know, died in Spokane, Washington. So like having that moment of being like, oh, cool. Like there's someone who like lived a life that was kind of, you know, he is a successful regional jazz musician, a gigging musician at the time. And so he's really, he was like a form of a possibility model for me. So it's about, you know, reclaiming this moment of, while yes, maybe he didn't identify, want to be like talked about as an out trans icon or figure. But what does he mean to people in my generation, in the next generation, who need people like him? You know, we need, like how we need these stories. And it's about just kind of like, it's really a conversation.
No, I mean, it's a necessary one too, I think. I mean, is his family involved at all in the, the doc?
His, Billy Tipton Jr., so his youngest son, is kind of like, he was like the emotional heir of Billy's life. And he had given, you know, he kept everything of Billy's, like his saxophones, his music, his pomade. So he had like, you know, we did get to talk to him, and it's, and the structure of the film is not as a traditional documentary. There are like a lot of like talking heads in terms of like trans historians and musicologists and people who know trans history and his story. And then Billy Tipton Jr. is one of the people we interview. But then we have an element of like casting, where we bring in like all trans masculine actors to audition for the role of Billy Tipton. And in between those auditions, it's conversations about, you know, did they know his story? Did they not? So it's it brings it to a community, you know, it's a community conversation.
No kidding. And what did you find like to be the answer of, I mean, this is the first I'm hearing about this person, and like, holy shit, why?
Yeah, I found like the younger generation to not, like kids who were maybe like, you know, in their late teens, early 20s, weren't really aware of who he was, or had just heard about him when they got the audition for this. The people who are like, you know, 30s and older trans guys had heard of him. And, you know, it's all like, there's some moments in there where it's a big part of the conversation is like the talk show circuit and the exploiting of Billy's family in 1989. So you'll see that there's Oprah makes a cameo because his family did the talk show circuit, and they asked very unwell questions at the time, really tried to get them to spin a narrative out of Billy being a deceiver instead of being a man who lived a stealth trans life. Or stuff, or just lived his life, period, if we're not using the language. So that's a part of it.
Oh my God. Thing.
Sometimes, you know, Billy's story, because I link it to the Brandon Tina story sometimes. And the way that the media treated Brandon Tina, same way.
And do you feel at all that there has been a change in the media and how we tell, you know, either real life or scripted trans stories?
I think, of course. I think that there's definitely, comparing it to 1989, like now, if you're going to misgender or like try and spin a narrative of trans deception on a talk show, or, you know, then it's, I mean, it's not, you're not going to get
people
away with
will
it.
Come for you on dragged. Twitter.
And it's, but I think that people have a bigger responsibility now as journalists, as storytellers, trans or cis, that, you know, they're aware of like the stakes.
Finally. I mean, this is a huge project that, like, I imagine you know, like, you have to prepare these answers. You have to know the project intimately. But, like, also, I feel a little bit like you are also that icon paving the way for people that, like, you're just living your fucking life authentically and massively successful. Like, do you feel that at all with what you're doing in the space?
I feel like as someone who has always been like an artist from a, you know, from a small kid, you know, into like photography as a young adult, and to now like writing, it feels like the way that I connect with like my transness is to, you know, talk about it through storytelling, through visual art. And, and that's, I guess that is in one way, like leaving something behind or for something for people to see. But that's really nice of you to say. I mean, it sometimes it's like, it feels a bit heavier than I wish, but it's just something that, you know,
well,
comes
with
the territory.
As it becomes more and more visible, and even just, you know, being on an iconic show like Gossip Girl and stuff, like, it just feels, again, like the universe taking us in the right direction. And honoring that and keep, like, I don't know if you believe any of that like spiritual witchy shit, but I do think like everything happens exactly as it's supposed to happen. And what do you see hopefully for yourself in the future? Because to me, you made it. Like, I don't know what else you want, because I'd just be like, I retire now.
I'd love to keep working, you know, unscripted television, dramas and comedies. I want to do both. I'd love to, you know, eventually be a showrunner one day, create my own show.
The hardest job of all.
Of course, when I completely like, you know, lose every hair that I have left.
Yeah, right, right.
I think that it's been such a fun collaborative experience for me. And so I'm really loving this after working in like, you know, more of like an unscripted and documentary.
Right.
And as a photographer, and even back when I was a background artist, you know,
you got it all.
Writing in the writer's room I feel very content and inspired.
Yeah. And like, I really appreciate your multi-hyphenate career, because I'm someone going through something sort of similar. I'm currently on a creator of a doc that is a feature doc with LeBron James's company about mental health, with a story about a young girl who wrongfully imprisoned is still in the judicial system. She's supposed to be out any day now. That's a whole nother episode. Nice. But like, to be doing that and then being known as like a YouTuber, but then also like working with Lauren, our mutual friend, on a scripted show, like sometimes I feel that I'm worried the industry is going to be like, you can't do this because you've been doing this thing. Do you find any sort of like pigeonholes or typecasting for as a writer that you have had to deal with? Or,
well, not yet in terms of being a writer, but when I was trying to make the jump from like unscripted, as like I was a producer on like Gaycation on Viceland, and then I was working on a bunch of other like shows that were nothing like Gaycation, but as like a producer in that world, where I wanted to cross over so badly to scripted, but it was you know, so separated that I knew that I had to start from, you know, the very beginning, which meant, you know, being a PA and them training me as a script coordinator in my 30s, like that was
working the way up.
Yeah. And it was something that I was like, okay, this isn't, so me being a producer in this world is not going to translate.
Right.
Or, you know, it was just like the way that I was able to, you know, that's just how I played it, because it also was good. I learned a lot doing these support roles, and it meant a lot to be able to just even be in a writer's room at that time. In the supportive role.
I mean, to me, it's so fun and full circle that you were in an episode of the original Gossip Girl, and now you're like, that if anything just shows exactly what we're fucking talking about, that like, you can do it all.
The universe. It's just, universe. The full circle universe. I will post those pictures one day, maybe before my episode airs.
Oh my god, please. Did you make it? Are you in any of the new Gossip Girl episodes? Did you go on set or anything?
No, I didn't.
Oh my god. You didn't try and poke your little head in. I would be like, hey, dress me in something fantastic.
No, because I'm in LA and I haven't, you know, COVID. Things are really, you know, locked down. It's not as easy to for me to just visit.
Fair.
Hopefully in the future.
Season 2, I'm putting it out there. There's no fucking way they ain't making it to season 2, baby. That shit was the most watched premiere on HBO Max. We know that to be true. That's an accolade to add. I mean, I feel excited that I've met you in like your explosion here. Like, I can only see it going up for you. And, you know, I appreciate, again, you taking the time to talk about this, and like, really want you to know how big of a deal you are and what you're doing. And I only see positive things going up from here. But before I shower you and plug and blah blah blah, I want to play a little game with you before we go.
I
just have to get a little Gossip Girl on here. So I've named this game XOXO or no. So your answer is either going to be XOXO as a yes or just no. Okay. So I'm going to ask you a few questions, and of course, if there's anything you can't reveal, just feel free to be like, no, I'm not going to tell you that. Okay. Do you agree, XOXO or no, that OB definitely has Dan Humphrey's hair?
XOXO.
Yes, like 100%. I'm like, are you kidding me? They are. Okay. Is Audrey somehow related to Blair? Because come on, they are motherfucking twins. Do you
know? No clue. I have no idea.
Okay, because holy shit, when I saw that, I was like, oh my god, they're going to make this Blair's daughter or something. And then I saw their mom, Kiki, and I was like, oh, okay, never mind. I was trying to figure out how Kiki could be like a nickname for Blair Waldorf, and I never found it because it's not real. Okay. XOXO or no, Zoya is as innocent as Jenny Humphreys was.
That sounds like a trick question.
Yeah, because Jenny went fucking Tommy and... Yeah,
trick question.
Okay, no, then we pass that one. Okay. TikTok will be making an appearance somehow in the social media, XOXO or no?
I actually don't know.
Okay, because listen, I love the way you guys portrayed social media in the show, but I'm like, where is TikTok?
Yeah, TikTok is huge. I love just scrolling TikTok. I don't create on there, but I'm just looking at it all day.
Same. I have this audience knows I've had so many fucking TikTok people on this podcast. It's part of my life. I hope to see them making some TikTok dances. That would make me very happy.
That would be really okay. Fun.
And my last question, XOXO or no, Space Coke is a real thing?
XOXO. That one I can answer.
Oh my God. When I saw that, I was like, is that so? Space Coke, for anyone who hasn't seen episode 3, is cocaine with a dash of ketamine. Listen, I go out in West Hollywood, I have never heard of Space Coke.
I mean, I think it might be going by a different name now. That I don't know how often that term is used nowadays.
Okay,
it is a term that I remember.
Yeah, okay, fair enough, because I'm like, I want to go to wherever that club is.
That was good. That was
good. Okay, that was memorable. The game. That was memorable. No, it was very memorable. Amos, thank you again so much for doing this. Will you please tell our confidants and listeners where they can find more of you and your project?
Of course. You can find me on Instagram at AmosMack, AmosMac. My website's amosmack.com for info on screenings of No Ordinary Man. And I'll also give you the link. Maybe you can paste it for like the direct ticket link. Or
100% will be below. Yeah.
And you know where to find Gossip Girl on HBO Max.
Not HBO Max. If you don't have HBO Max, what are you doing? Get rid of that Netflix. You don't need that Amazon Prime. HBO Max is where it's at. Amos, thank you so much. And confidants, we will see you next week. XOXO. Gossip.